All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight. In the world of sports, we have a Indianapolis 500 winner and is a story of recovery, redemption, and the road back from being more or less forgotten in his sport for Juan Pablo Montoya. We have a story of a second season for the Indiana baseball team as they start off getting a bid to the NCAA tournament as an at-large team after not being able to make their streak 3 years as Big Ten tournament champions, but they are in the big dance and start this Friday. Indiana basketball still recruiting, as you could imagine, and heading eventually here towards the NBA draft and what the Pacers may do. But we'll start here locally in Bloomington, IU baseball. Again, not able to stretch their streak towards the end of the season, a very good streak towards the end of the season, into a third straight Big Ten championship, at least in the tournament championship. So no automatic bid, some clenching, I suppose, over the weekend as they waited to find out their fate as to whether they would get into the NCAAs as an at-large. And they did. The strength of their schedule, the strength of their late season, gets them into the tournament. And Glass, we talked about this a little bit last week then. Also, partly the strength of the fact that they have been a pretty good team the last couple of years into the NCAAs, getting all the way to the College World Series, earning some respect for the Big Ten and some other Big Ten teams, earning some respect of their own. So, you know, I hate to say this is a new start or a big deal going forward necessarily for the Big Ten, but it certainly appears to have been a few years leading up to where we're at right now. And maybe the Big Ten, you know, dare I say, becoming a bit of a baseball conference, or at least getting respect for it, but when they maybe didn't before.
Conference record, 5 teams into the NCAA tournament, and 6th, Michigan State, had a decent argument. Their RPI was around 50, and I know that's not the only metric, but they swept Oregon at Oregon, and Oregon got in RPI 64. Now, some folks will argue that the Pac-12 might be a tougher league than the Big Ten, but hey, five teams are in there. And so the league was more balanced. There wasn't as many dead weight teams in the league this year. And so doing well in your league, and Indiana finished above 500. I believe they were 12-10 when it was all said and done in league play, and took care of some good teams along the way as well. They won series against Cal State Fullerton, who I believe finished there in the tournament. They won against the Long Beach State team that had some cachet. They started their year at Stanford, the revenge tour from last year. But they did enough, and they swept Maryland at Maryland. Maryland made the tournament. Ohio State, I don't believe, got in, but Ohio State was ranked highly near the end of the season before crashing out late. Indiana took care of them in, what, 4 straight to end the year, 3 in Bloomington and 1 in the Big Ten tournament. So they did. Their reward, well, that's a little bit tough. They opened against the, I believe, the defending national champion, Vanderbilt Commodores, in that.
In their region.
Yeah, that's the tough part on there. So they are the number 3 seed in the Nashville regional. What happens is there are 16 regionals across the country, 8 seeded teams, and then 8 other teams hosting regionals. Vanderbilt, I believe, were the regular season SEC champions and lost in the SEC title game to Florida. So if Indiana happens to get past Radford, yes, that Radford, Big South champions, regular season or tournaments, they've only lost, what, 15 times this year, 14 times?
43-14.
That's a pretty good number there, because it doesn't matter who you're playing to win, what is that, 66 baseball, 65% baseball.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That is pretty good. But Indiana has a chance, and that's all they were looking forward to. And as we mentioned a month ago, they were looking to win games, let alone win series, let alone to play themselves into the Big Ten tournament, Dave, let alone the NCAA tournament. So when the money got on the table, the Hoosiers put it together at the right time of year and took care of some business late. And it's rookie manager, first-timer, Chris Lemonis, his former Louisville team. They were the only team to repeat and go to the College World Series the last 2 years. So he knew a little thing about winning. He knew a little thing about pushing buttons at the right time of the season. You saw starting pitchers move to the bullpen, bullpen pitchers move to starting pitchers, and yep, it's all hands on deck. When you know you have limited opportunities to impress, You have to pull out all the stops. They got some timely hitting. They got some timely pitching. And they got some guys doing what they needed to do, which was carry the team both from the mound and the batter's box. So 3 o'clock on Friday, ESPN3 will have the coverage for you. That is internet only. You can hook it up to your big screen and watch it on there if you want to. But 3 straight NCAA appearances, 6th in program history. Remember, they went in, I believe, 2009 as well. So they've been 4 in the last however many years that is, 4 in the last 6.
Well, and they've
not bad.
They've lost
not
a lot, a pretty good amount of talent off this team for the last couple of years. I mean, remember a couple of years ago when they went to Florida State and won in the Super Regional
with a bunch of
on their way to the World Series. Exactly. I mean, this was a very talented team, both hitting and particularly power hitting, but then also with the pitching. And it's not the same group of guys. So I mean, doing this for Chris Lemonis is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not about just resting on what was sitting around and all these big draft picks that are coming that are sitting around waiting for him when he got here. Let's be fair there. I mean, Tracy Smith compiled a lot of talent, but we lost some pretty good players, some guys ready to get into the majors.
You got to find ways to push guys' buttons. You got to get them fired up and doing that. But I think the one thing that helped Indiana getting out of this funk or turning it around late was they looked into the dugout and saw their leader and his staff had been at Louisville, a place that they've done that. It wasn't lip service. It had happened before. So when he talked about it, sure, he wasn't the head coach in charge of he wasn't the CEO of everything that happened, but he had a very integral part in making it. Yeah, so there wasn't that, what is this guy talking about? What does he know? We've been here. What's he trying to tell us how to do that?
Right.
So once I think everybody got a little bit more familiar with each other, and that's another part of that gets swept under the rug. There is baseball guys are weird. Soccer guys are weird. Baseball guys are weird.
Yeah.
And there was a real interesting quote I saw on one of the post games, and I can't remember if it was a Big Ten tournament or when they were beating Ohio State. Something like, hey, coach, guys are jumping around singing, dancing in the dugout. And he said, hey, as long as they're winning games, they can jump around and sing and dance. So you just – Tracy Smith, different cat. Great guy. Tracy and I see eye to eye. Why? We're a little off center. It's cool. Tracy had 19 years of, hey, I've done this or been there, done that. Different clubhouse. And then now you bring in Lemonis, first year, first time as a head coach. He's got to set down his rules, parameters, everything else. And I'm guessing they weren't the same
they
as
Tracy. Probably weren't thrilled to begin with.
Well, you know.
It was rough early.
It wasn't. Early was okay. It's having that group come together. And then you had guys that were starting in the early season were moved into the bullpen because they weren't producing. And that's what it's all about. You can't worry about being their friend. You got to worry about winning games. And it seemed like once they kind of found out everybody's roles and they kind of settled into this and that, they started playing better. Guys got over some injury problems. Ramos was hurt forever at shortstop, so they had a revolving door in the infield trying to find guys, trying to rely on freshmen. And those all work in spots, but when you don't have your best guys, again.
You got to have your talent.
Sure.
I mean, come on.
Your Friday starter 2.5 months ago is now your long reliever.
Right.
Your setup guy is now your second starter. Luke Harrison went from the seventh inning. Efros started the year start and had some tightness in his arm. They put him back in the bullpen where he'd been forever. Then he started. Then he went. So everybody seemed to fit in, and it translates. And the only way chemistry works is when it works. You can talk about chemistry till you're green. You can talk about it till you're blue in the face. But until the results start following the chemistry, that's the key. The one thing, and he brought this up yesterday, there were a few times during the season it would have been easier to pack it in.
Sure.
Than to get tough, but and Joe and I talked about this on the air. The sweep in Maryland when they had to go to College Park and Maryland was ranked like 17th or 18th in the country and playing great in the Big Ten. They went out there, the bats woke up, the pitching woke up, the omelet came together. They'd have days where they'd lose 12-10, and they'd have days where they get beat 3-2.
Like in Bull Durham, they just needed a rain out or something.
Well,
on a road trip.
You got ham, you got eggs, and when you put them together, it's an omelet. It's delicious, and that finally came together. They pitched well that weekend, they hit well that weekend, and they beat a really good team, and they got some of that confidence back. In May, I think they finished before the two losses in the Big Ten tournament. They were 10-1 or 11-1, so they got hot at the right time. They've got an opportunity. And last year, a Stanford team that came in with some guys that could play, some decent pitching, they were a two seed. Baseball is a very, very funny game. And you could go back 2 years ago and say, where would Indiana have even gone, Ben showed up, if Chad Clark doesn't hit a 3-run home run in the bottom of the eighth against Valpo
when
they're trailing 5-3 or whatever it was in that game. You look up, a guy weighs 128 pounds and smacks him over the wall, and he's dancing down the first baseline because he knew it was gone.
Yeah.
That ball doesn't go over the fence. You have no idea where this history turns or twists. The point of the matter is they have a chance because their action led to that chance. It wasn't a favor from the committee. They right. scheduled hard. Mm-hmm. They won enough games in their conference. They won enough games in their conference tournament. And the teams they beat, I think it was 15 in the top 50 RPI. That's a really good – that's almost half your wins, 34.
And you mentioned the schedule. I mean, you saw some teams coming into Bloomington this year.
Who wanted a little piece of scheduling themselves,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
I mean, Cal State – we had Cal State Fullerton. I mean, those are some teams you don't see often.
Plus you play
around this area.
They swept Louisville, who was a 3 overall seed. The Louisville hasn't beat them in some time. But, again, you have to go out and schedule like that. Now people with your cachet will schedule you back because they know it can help as well. Mm-hmm. But you still got to beat some teams. And they did that. And now they've got another chance. They can pull, like Joe mentioned. Joe was great the other day. He said, hey, why don't they just go Stanford it down there?
Sure.
Play close and get a close enough game. Don't kick the ball around. Don't walk the ballpark. And stranger things have happened. Pressure affects teams differently. And I think last year, maybe a little pressure got to Indiana because they had Schwarber, because they had Travis, because mm-hmm. they had this, because they had that. And they should have. The year before that was like, hey, we're kids.
Yeah,
watch this. We're all sophomores, and we'll see if we can get anything happening. Last year, you don't know if that pressure affected them down the stretch. Now, who likes being the underdog? So 99% of the teams like
they're
the
third seed in the Nashville Regional, which is Vanderbilt, the defending champion, hosting. They are the number one seed. They play Indiana does Radford Friday, 2 o'clock. It's on the internet.
2 o'clock Nashville time.
2 o'clock Nashville time.
Yeah.
Thank you. And that's ESPN3, so that'll be online. If they were to win, the SEC Network may have the game. So a couple of these games may end up on the SEC Network. Keep an eye out for that.
The SEC Network will have it, especially if Vanderbilt wins.
It should be on ESPN3 at the very least, so you should be able to find
it. The consolation game will be here's what's going to happen. The consolation game is going to be on the internet in the winner's bracket game because it's going to be Vanderbilt. It's going to be Vanderbilt's playing Lipscomb. And again, you have to be decent to get in the tournament, but most of these four seeds you see, Dave, are the automatic qualifiers.
Right.
Let's be fair.
But like Radford, they're 16th seeds.
Yes. Radford, though, they're going to be more like a 12.
They're not
Dave.
Bad. 15 game winning streak.
24th. They're receiving votes, too, so it's just not all automatic bids for them and big victories. They have, again, played. It's a meritocracy. It's really simple. You're going to go. It's a double elimination format. If you get beat twice, you go home. If you don't, you go on.
There you go.
Win a series. That's all you've done all year long. Try to win series.
Friday afternoon, so we'll keep an eye on that. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Again, Indiana facing Radford on Friday. Radford finished the season ranked in all six polls. Think about going into college football postseason nowadays with six polls to choose from.
Even if they're ranked in five of the six, that's still a good season.
43-14 was their record. They started 9-10. So that would
be
34-4 to end the season.
I'm guessing there are better opponents wearing that 9-10 stretch than the.
I would think so.
Probably this.
They got swept by Auburn in that stretch.
It happens, and that's why you play 56 or whatever they are. You've got time to correct the ship. And Indiana, at one point, as we talked about, they weren't going anywhere and found a way to get out of it. And, again, I think Indiana was 22-18, 22-20. So it wasn't hot.
34-4 is pretty impressive.
That is, no matter where you put it, because that means you're hitting and you're pitching.
Exactly.
And a lot of balls are bouncing your way. But that's the whole thing. Get guys out and, again, make pitchers work. Don't give up. Don't have four or five out innings, and don't walk the building. Those are it's a formula, simple as time. But the kids have to execute in Indiana with the experience they have. Dave, this is Radford's first trip to anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they should lean on. Indiana's manager's been there. These players that have been there. Heck, the juniors have been to all three. They haven't missed anything.
That's right.
And the seniors only missed out on one year. So there you have it.
333-2665 is our phone number. Let's bring in John. How you doing, John?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I got a question. Good. I've been wondering this for a while, and maybe you, one of you guys will know the answer. Why does Wisconsin not play baseball?
It's cold up there, man.
Here's why. It's a lot of water, too. I think they did.
They dropped it in the either late 80s or early 90s.
Barry Alvarez, I believe, dropped it.
And back then, they had a basketball gym that seated less than 10,000 people, and football wasn't that good. But now they get 82,000 plus for football, and they get 17,000 plus for basketball, every basketball game. And if Northwestern can field a baseball team, don't you think that Wisconsin should be able to, too?
Now, remember,
let's find that out.
Minnesota.
They were discontinued at the conclusion of the 1991 season. I don't think Barry was AD at that point. He was a head football coach then, right?
The reason they were discontinued, I would guess, is either Title IX, which is part of it, or they weren't very good for a long time and just said the heck with it. And remember, Minnesota...
They definitely weren't very good.
Minnesota had what's the word I'm looking for? The comfort of playing in the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome for some time, which makes it a little easier to keep your program going up there.
I was just looking at Radford's schedule. They started in February. February in Wisconsin.
Well, everybody starts at the same time now. That was not the case in the old days in college baseball.
Here's their last few years. This is starting with 91.
Doesn't tell you why they gave it up.
Well, I'm going to get there in a second. Okay. 6-22, 8-20, 9-19, 15-13, 5-11, 10-6, 3-13. I mean, they're barely playing any games at that point in time. Maybe that was the way to go. I imagine it's got to have something to do with where they were playing. And as you mentioned, Title IX became an awfully big deal.
I think they dropped it for hockey, John. I think that they had to make a decision and they
went. Everybody else is playing. They've got Big Ten TV money now and everything
else. You can make the same argument. Why does everybody play soccer? All you need is a 120 by 50-yard field. I mean, that's
right. But you would think because they played it before and they just discontinued it because maybe money crunch and Alvarez just got there.
Well, remember before Maryland came to the Big Ten, they dropped 11, 12, 8, 10, 9 sports. They dropped a handful of sports because their athletic department was bleeding money.
Right.
They dropped a ton of sports.
They were $2 million in debt and under a federal deadline to balance the male-female scholarship ratio for Title IX.
John, the other thing is, Illinois was women's soccer.
They weren't winning football, by the way, at that time.
No, they were not.
They were not winning, so they were not any good, and they were not filling that place up. So they did not have cash coming out the nose.
I know they were losing money and everything like that, but they have reversed that situation now. And you would think that with everybody else, it would be an ego thing if nothing else. Everybody else is playing. Why shouldn't we be playing now?
Well, then again, if you add it right now, you have to add another women's sport that would have comparable scholarships, or drop another men's sport. And when you drop a sport, you know how much trouble that causes, regardless of gender. But you have to balance those federal books, and that's understandable. What I know is you look at Illinois, Purdue, great women's soccer programs. They have fields. Guys don't even pick up soccer. And again, it all has to do with what kind of money you want to stick in your back pocket. And then you look at Ohio State. We're 24 sports. One team at IU, they have like 35 sports.
They've got
pistoleering and fencing and equestrian and all kinds of stuff. Because their football program pays for all.
They have the money. Well, that's the thing with baseball. And let's be fair, any women's sports that they're going to add on that they don't have right now, even if they eventually become revenue generators,
baseball is 9.9 or 11. I can't remember scholarships.
I thought it was 11.7.
Could be somewhere in there.
I mean, it's a funky number. It's not exactly.
I was trying to go with that, though, is it's pure cost. There is almost no revenue to speak of, and if you add the women's sport on top of that, if you don't have it already, how's it going to establish itself? It's not going to, you're not going to come up with curling and walk in the door and make money on that also.
The pure cost does not even have to do with the scholarship. It has to do with travel. That's what it comes
down to. Travel equipment, all that sort of thing. Facilities.
And again...
No, Wisconsin should have it. There's no question that Wisconsin ought to be banking plenty of money from their football program.
But again,
now their basketball
program.
You
could name the great Big Ten teams ever in baseball, both of them.
Barry Larkin, Michigan, one. Dave Winfield.
Indiana was a second.
And then you have a couple of Hoosier ones in there, maybe the next. But again, baseball has not been that driving force. It'll be interesting to see moving forward with the expansion of monies from the college football championship and all that stuff as well, if they add things or if they just line their pockets.
That's the point I'm trying to make. I understand why they did it before. I figured it was probably a money situation or something to do with Title IX. But now they're making money, and if Northwestern can do it, they ought to be able to figure something out so they aren't the, you know, they aren't the ugly stepchild sitting out there saying there's 14 teams in this league and 13 are playing baseball, but we're the only ones that aren't.
Yep, that's how it stands right now. You're absolutely right.
I've wondered, and I thought, well, you guys might have a clue what's going on because, I mean, I remember a long time ago when they used to play baseball. And no, they weren't very good, but we weren't very good
either.
Well,
keep in mind again
at
the time.
Now you got to build a
stadium? Money-wise, yeah, exactly. Money-wise then, in 1991, Wisconsin was atrocious. I mean, they were awful.
Yeah.
They were the easy win. It was them and Northwestern that were the easy wins in the conference. I mean, it was a no-brainer wherever you played them.
You should send Barry an email and ask him just what the hell's going on up there.
Yeah, well.
You know what? My buddy's a men's soccer coach up there. I'll ask him. I'll ask him up there. See what.
Thanks for clearing
that
up.
No, it is. It's interesting because you think about the sports. Obviously, everybody plays basketball and football. Then you start knocking around, and people always say, "Well, how many teams are in the Big Ten for soccer?"
Yeah, it's like six, isn't it? And Kentucky's in there too.
Or
where's Kentucky?
No, they're back in the
MAC.
Were in the MAC for a while. Yes.
Well, Kentucky is the only SEC school that actually plays soccer, aren't they?
I believe for the men's side as of right now, but. Rutgers and Maryland came in and helped out. Minnesota, Iowa, Purdue, Illinois do not. Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State do.
Michigan just picked it up in the last 10 years.
Yeah,
our
buddy Ernie Yarbrough went up there and helped him start the program before he came back to IU and then did that. So it's interesting to see because, again, Michigan, you would think, wow, what's the problem there? You got 110,000 people, 8 Saturdays a year.
I'll tell you, I remember this quote. I read it. I wasn't here, but I read it in a paper someplace. Someone asked when Bo Schembechler was the AD at Michigan and said, when are we going to get a soccer program? Like Indiana, they use that as a reference point. He said, you get a soccer program here when Indiana gets a football program.
There's Bo.
I remember reading the quote there, him saying that.
Well, that's...
Of course, a couple years later, Indiana beat them, I think in the last 87 or something like that. I know it had been a long time. They didn't have one for a long time.
Yeah.
But I just wondered because, I mean, you would think that a school as big and as wealthy as Wisconsin is would figure it out. I mean, they can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah, they might not want to. That's the other thing. You got to build a brand new stadium. I doubt they got a stadium just laying around waiting for baseball use. You can't convert a softball stadium to baseball. You can't do a two-way stadium. It doesn't work.
For a long time, the Brewers couldn't draw anybody.
I'll put your name on that if you give us the money.
Yeah, and then you got to knock down a building, and then you got to secure land.
Do they have a minor league team up in Madison?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
I know they're doing Beloit, but that's probably a low
league. No, Madison does. It's a great one. They got a nice deal. You go out there and spend $35, and that's all beer you want. Well, they don't need the other help, do they? Somebody's making money. I'll follow the money, find the answer. And probably the angle is if it's easier to do nothing than it is to do something. I think that's the bottom line there.
I just thought that the peer pressure and just looking around, seeing everybody else playing with them, would kind of bug them and think, hey, listen, maybe we ought to start this up again because we're the only ones not playing.
There's three seasons.
It could, and I wouldn't write off the fact that they'd have to add another sport to the other side,
and
justify it entirely behind the men's side of things. That could rankle some feathers. I know you'd have to go both ways, and you would do it.
Why would you bring on costs when you sell out your football stadium, your 18,000 seat or 19,000 seat basketball arena 25 times a year? You don't need it. That's the other thing. You'd need somebody there to champion the cause. A former baseball player that owns Sun Microsystems or something that's got $1 trillion in his pocket. But we'll leave that up to Wisconsin. I got a question for you, John, because I always like to make you think as well. You can't win in the NBA, can you? Unless you have a premium ultra star player, can you?
No.
But when have they? I mean, that's just it.
Name me the last team.
I got one.
The
Pistons with
it.
Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, Rasheed Wallace.
Those are really good players.
Those are really good five guys.
Those guys aren't going to the Hall of Fame.
No, none of those guys. That is the exception, no. I guess, to the
that's
rule.
That's it.
But that's just
isn't
it. It is the exception. I mean, that's the whole point there. I mean, the Miami Heat won it with three.
The first Miami Heat team had Dwayne Wade.
Yes.
And that was about it, right?
Right.
There wasn't a whole lot of help there, but it's still an ultra-premium guy in his prime that won a title. So you either have to develop one or you've got to get really lucky in the draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I'd forgotten about the Pistons then. But
that's it.
It's, it's kind of like the saying that if you want to win an NCAA title, you better have some McDonald's All-Americans, as much as we kind of make fun of them sometimes because some of those guys don't deserve it or something like that.
I can pick out the three NCAA champion teams that in the last 20 years that you could say, wow, how did they do that? And one of them was Duke that beat Butler a couple years ago. But then I look up and Singler's playing 80 games this year, and he's not a superstar player.
Shire's coaching, but
That was one of them Duke, oh God, we hate you kind of. You're out coaching us with all.
And Butler couldn't throw the ball in the ocean that game either.
Well, and they couldn't against Connecticut the other time they played them. That was an atrocious game as well. But when you look at the college game,
Maryland was that way.
Every time North Carolina's won with Roy Williams, every team's had five first-round draft picks or four first-round draft picks.
The Maryland team was full of draft picks, too.
They were. They were a very good team. And you have to go back and scrape. I mean, where? You can't even. Both the Florida teams had Noah.
Like it might be
this UConn
team that just won.
The other one with Kevin. Yeah. The one Kevin Ollie's first year with the point guard
Napier.
Yeah.
Was it Kemba Walker and Napier? Kemba Walker was Kemba Walker beat Butler. That's
Kemba
right.
Walker's
Bo Wright was the other one.
Yeah,
Wright and Napier. Yeah.
And you just don't find teams. You find a Wichita State that gets into the Final Four like that. You find a team like Butler who can get to the title game a couple times. But you got to have talent to win, and that's why the big coaches get paid those big bucks because they bring in those kids.
Up on your when you're on your next your break here in a second. See, where did Steph Curry go, and how many teams passed on Steph Curry in the draft when he went into the draft?
I read on Twitter the other day he was offered college scholarships by three programs.
Yeah, but when he got drafted by the Warriors,
I think he went 13.
There were like at least 10 teams that passed on him.
Seventh overall in the first round by Golden State.
Yeah, so there are six teams that passed on him,
which always happens. Jimmer Fredette went before him, didn't he? Didn't Jimmer go?
I don't have the draft in front of
me. Oh, okay. Gotcha. There's always like that, though. There's always that guy.
Griffin, Hashim the Beat.
There you go.
James Harden, not bad. Tyreek Evans, Ricky Rubio, Johnny Flynn,
Johnny
Steph Curry.
There you go. That's when Minnesota took the two-point guards from Florida, everybody. They Johnny Flynn is not playing NBA basketball anymore. Ricky Rubio is hurt more than Pat Graham was at IU.
Hashim the Beat.
He was in the D-League last year.
Yeah.
So,
Blake Griffin and James Harden are bad.
Better have some talent, and nobody knew about Harden. That team didn't even go to the NCAA tournament, did they?
No, they didn't. But everybody knew about Curry, and I was surprised some people passed on him because he could –
He beat Kansas. He beat Bill Self's team. He had 350. Did they beat him or he missed the one at the buzzer?
Well, I don't know.
He had like a 30-footer.
They beat Wisconsin that year too, right?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Whoever they lost to, he had a good look to win it, and it didn't go in if I remember correctly.
Right.
John, great job as always.
Thanks, guys.
Keep us on our toes.
I'll email Barry and see if I can get him.
Get him going.
See if he'll come on the show with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff.
Bye.
Thanks, buddy.
Crack the whip there. We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming note, we got a couple nights off of Reds baseball, but we pick them back up Friday night. Washington is in town over the weekend. 7 o'clock is pregame on Friday. We'll have them Saturday also, 4 o'clock pregame there.
And the end of the segment, we'll give away a pair of tickets to see Sunday's 1:15 start at the Great American Ballpark, so stay tuned for that.
And if you don't call them, I'm going to take them.
Go.
Get in here. 333-2665 is our phone number. Let's bring in Roy.
Hey, Roy.
Roy.
Hey, guys, like I was saying off air, I don't think you guys really covered Title IX strong enough and how much of a driver that is in sports. I mean,
well, wiped out their men's baseball program, so that's pretty that's a loud statement.
Yeah, well, but if you read some of the more strongly women's sports commentaries around, you'll find people that are sitting there saying Title IX should be like a IUB. 55-45 because the overall student population is 55-45 women.
Sure.
There ought to be more women's.
So they think equal is equal based on that equality.
Right, right.
Just
right.
Not 50-50.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, like I say, you know, while athletic departments are fighting back against that, you know, the concept of bringing a men's sport on again is you know, absolutely out the.
You can. You have to bring on an equal amount of scholarships, absolutely.
And let's be clear. I mean, we didn't start any today with any reason to talk about Title IX in particular, but this particular situation brought it up. At that time, Wisconsin and everybody, at least who was taking public money, these are state schools. Mm-hmm. These are not – I mean, Northwestern doesn't have to adhere to Title IX if they don't want to. They
it's
may.
It's federal law. I think they have to.
It's federal money. It's about the money is what it comes down to. But the point there is Wisconsin came to a point, just like a lot of athletic departments did, where they had to even the books as far as scholarships were concerned.
When it was enacted,
they made a decision that a lot of schools made, and that is to cut a men's sport to bring it down to where the women's scholarships were, rather than add women's scholarships. And the reason, of course, at that time is their football team stunk. They weren't drawing anybody. They didn't have the extra money laying around, so they made the financial decision to cut scholarships on the whole and had to do it on the men's side to even it out.
Actually, they did both. I use a prime example of that. You look at the field hockey team. You've got 17, 18 girls that all live east of the Alleghenies. You look at the water polo team. You know, it's a bunch of California girls.
Sure.
You know, like I say, they've been great. They've come in here.
Rowing, just the last few years, has turned into a varsity sport as well, mm-hmm. and they've got a handful of scholarships on that program. So, yeah, it's all about opportunity, and that's how it should be, because there are rules you have to play by. And moving forward, that is great. And if they want to shift it a little bit in the women's favor because there's more of the population, well, so be it. I think now you're fighting over millions. You're not fighting over hundreds like you were 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Now you got extra millions laying around, and that makes the decisions – either a lot easier to line your pockets or keep expanding your departments, and those are decisions that now have a federal footprint they have to follow.
Well, and let's be clear, and Roy, thanks for
good
the phone
job,
call.
Roy,
we
yeah.
appreciate it. You know, so much in the last 10 years has become money rolling in due to other
not
factors
other
that didn't
yeah.
exist the other times. I mean, before, it used to be attendance and a little bit of merchandise, you know, was how you generated all your revenue. Nowadays, I mean, we're in the black here at Indiana University as athletic.
One of six or eight.
Because of BTN. I mean, it's broadcast yeah. rights at this point in time that are bringing that all in. I mean, we like Fred Glass and all, but it's not like he did something
and
brilliant to suddenly put us there with a football program that doesn't draw any better. It's all broadcast money that didn't exist 20,
massive,
30 years ago.
Massive misconception about collegiate athletics. The scholarships that are given to the water polo players from Saskatchewan and the field hockey players from Buckstown, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. is all privately raised
sure.
money.
Sure.
They have to follow the formula of mm-hmm. how many scholarships they give, but that money is all privately raised money in the scholarship
department. Well, it all goes in there, along
the
with obviously the
revenues.
Funding
comes yes. in other departments. But
sure.
That federal funding doesn't go to athletic scholarships.
No,
you
no,
have
no,
to
no,
play
exactly.
by the, well, that's what gets
exactly.
lost.
Yeah,
so
exactly
when someone
right.
says, hey, you're going to raise my tax dollars by building a new stadium? That's all privately raised.
I mean, you could look.
Cindy Simon-Scott has just given $40
yes.
million dollars
we,
of her own money.
You can certainly debate whether that's the right use of $40 million, but you're exactly right. I mean, federal money coming into the university, and now the athletic department has to even
but that
out.
Is a misconception that the scholarships or whatever are funded by taxpayer dollars. That is completely untrue. That
oh,
is,
yeah, no.
The athletic department is a separate entity.
Well,
that's a play by the rules.
Assuming all of us fans who show up to games are paying taxes, then I suppose indirectly. No, I know
well,
what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's not tax money.
If you want to get into some
no,
it's socialist.
Not, it is not tax money. I mean,
no.
it does. It comes through the revenues
come
and that
out
comes
of your
a lot
pocket.
Of ways.
And no. that is a lot.
It comes
different.
Out of your Comcast.
Now,
bill,
we know Roy, Roy reads up on that. He understands it. I'm not picking on
yeah.
Roy, but that is a very. If you're a sports liker, that is a big misconception where you think Indiana
yeah.
is taking my tax dollars and putting a water polo team. Barry King, I love you, brother. If you're listening, you're my man. You know that. Cool. All right, let's do that. 333-2665. Caller number 3 wins tickets. Reds and Nationals this Sunday.
You better hurry or I'll get them. You don't want that to happen. We got to take a quick break. You're in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. We have a champion in the 99th running of the Indianapolis 500. You heard it for the 66th time here on WGCL.
Juan sure did.
Pablo Montoya back from NASCAR and Neverland, I suppose, with his career. But a story of redemption and the fourth closest victory margin for the Indianapolis 500. We talked about this the week before. How do you bring interest back to the month of May in Indianapolis
Same
and this race in
year.
Particular? I mean, are these sorts of things going to be it? Aren't the stories at least part of it?
Well, remember this time last year when the race had 50 passes in the last 25 laps last year. The racing.
The second closest margin.
You go 500 miles, you go 450 of them, you get all the dead weight out of the way, let's be fair, and then you let the heavy hitters sort it out on the track, and that's exactly what happened. It's the best rated race since 2011, so interest is up on the television side of things, and a very deserving champion. Listen to this stat. This was Montoya's third race. He's turned 600 laps, right? 200, 200, 200. I get you. He has led 192 of them. You think he knows how to drive that race course? 32% of the laps he's run at Indianapolis, he has led. My goodness.
Does the story of redemption do anything for IndyCar?
No, not at all. Nobody cares. Everybody cares about that race and what happened then. It's not like he has the triple crown to go get the rest of the year. He might not even, you know what? Go see how many races he drove before this.
You don't think the Andretti's and the AJ Foyt stuff and all that way back when helps out? That's what NASCAR banked on for a decade.
They did. They wanted Dale Earnhardt Jr. to start winning when his dad.
They wanted everybody fighting and doing all kinds of stuff.
Exactly right, but that hasn't been the case. But here's the thing. You need speed. Marco Andretti said it best. After the race, he said, "Hey, I'm done biting my tongue. Our car doesn't go fast enough." There, I said it. He goes on the oval. I'm not going anywhere. So I'm 3 miles an hour slower than the other group. There you go.
That hurts over 200 laps.
What do people? The stands were packed. The place was packed. People were into it. Why? Cars go fast. Drama happens, and you get the big name drivers there at the end. Montoya is a big name. Anybody who has won the Indianapolis 500 prior. Which he has. Biggest span ever between wins, 15 years, 14 years, whatever, 2000 and 2005, or 2001. Well, I can't remember which year it was. Anyhow, so that was a known quantity. It wasn't like it wasn't an up-and-comer. That was a guy that could race. You had guys at the front of the pack. Scott Dixon, how many of these has he won? Two or three? He's won. Yeah. You had Will Power up there. You had all the big names, the guys that went fast in the last 25 laps were all – you know what? It went on before that. These guys were at each other all day long. All over the board, and it was great. At least that's what it sounded like on the radio. It was thrilling to watch. So people, I could see why you – if you turned it on in the last 100 laps, I could see why you would have stayed on. The racing was fantastic. I even watched it on Sunday night. Me and Terry watched it. It was like when they're 2 inches from each other going 220 miles an hour.
Amazing.
My goodness, just to hold your nerve. But the big hitters, Dave, were important. You had Andretti was up there causing problems. You had Will Power. You had all the other guys that were fast earlier in the month. Doing it, you had enough wrecks to keep it to where it wasn't slowing the race down, but you had enough time for guys to get in and get out.
You didn't have people flying into the stands, which was a little bit of a concern.
There's no green white checker or white checker or however all that stuff works. But again, the greatest spectacle in racing was really, really good, and it registered. It obviously on the TV dial nationally. I'd still like to see it on TV around here. But a good week for Indy. I didn't have it. Hardly anybody arrested out there. It turned out great weather day. But you go fast, and that's the key. You go fast and you race. You can't have single file where a guy's just leading for 162 laps, and there's no trading back and forth. There's no action in the corners. You got to have something, and that's what they've had. I don't know if it's the new frame, the new aero kit, whatever they call it. Does Honda have enough? Does Chevrolet have too much? Let them fight that out. It's drama. You need that drama. Yeah. Race the cars. Stay out of trouble. And, again, the best drivers win. And we just told you, Montoya, 32% in three races he's been on the lead.
Well, nice to have, though, a
– But did you hear what he said after the race? And this kind of goes back to the point. Stay out of trouble for 400 miles.
Well, right.
Stay out of trouble. And let the dust settle. Right. And then you go beat the 12 guys, 8 guys, 6 guys.
Because where did he start? He started way back, didn't he?
He was out getting his wing fixed because he got clipped right with the first lap.
No, but I mean starting he wasn't in the top couple rows, was he?
No, but he was even farther back because I think once they started, Connor Daly's car caught on fire. He didn't even get going. And then you had people running into each other on the start, and it was nine laps before he even got up the cars up to speed. And he was at the back of the pack because he had to get his car fixed because someone ran into him on that. It was a comedy of errors to get it started. And all the people had said, well, this is going to be a terrible race. I got a bad feeling about
started
this month.
15th.
And there you go, which is almost halfway back of 33,
restarted
right?
Second to last.
There you go. And he found a way. Yeah, again, he stayed out of the jet wash. He stayed out of problems. And again, expert. Old guy, right? Old veteran.
Well,
driver.
I'll tell you what. To me, it's nice to have a good story to end it
win
up.
A race.
Not that we haven't in the last couple of years had nice stories, but to have this guy come back 15 years later, as you said, longest drought, if you will.
And you told me it was the fourth closest finish, so that means stuff was happening.
Yeah, stuff
it wasn't
was happening.
A blowout.
It was close at the end, and so you get a guy that everybody seems to like. You know, if you had any complaint, it would be you're still talking about Ganassi and Penske and nobody else.
They never fixed that problem.
But, yeah, that's
they
not
never
new.
Fixed it.
That is not
they
new.
They never fixed it.
So,
and they're never going to fix it.
No, and there were some interesting articles about, you know, what it takes and how you can rent a car and stuff like that leading into this.
His name was Juan Pablo Montoya. Somebody else could have bought him, but I don't know if he had enough car to put that all together. And you get a guy that's done it before on this track. So a two-time Indy 500 champion. There's not thousands of those. That's a pretty big step. He's raced three times. He's won twice.
He likes milk.
I'm guessing that he is the all-time winning percentage leader at the racetrack.
Yeah,
no, not at all. So exciting times. Good to hear the mantra, good to hear the buzz was about the cars on the track, not off the track, not above
not
the track.
Not crazy stuff, not the wheels.
And here's how good the racing was. You had a terrible pit incident. Guys, all right. That got swept under the rug because the racing was so good. Yep. You didn't have to focus on the negative. You had enough positive going on. Bravo, Indianapolis. Now, do it again. That's the key. So you've had tight racing here the last 2 years. They've got something that's working. I don't know if the series works. Don't talk to me about that. I'm focused on one race, and that's it.
Just get the one, as you said.
The greatest spectacle in racing, not the greatest spectacles in racings.
There's the music, folks. We got plenty to talk about when we come back next Monday, though, as half of the FIFA front office has been indicted in the United States and arrested in Switzerland and for corruption, which is a huge shock, I know, to folks that are fans of international soccer. Huge shock.
We'll have NBA Finals set by then.
Right.
Stanley Cup
LeBron
Finals.
LeBron is back in it, and we'll see if Steph gets there.
And let's hope maybe we've got an Indiana Regional Championship on the line Monday night.
That's right. So lots to talk about on Monday, so tune in then, won't you? Again, we'll have Reds baseball Friday night, 7 o'clock, Saturday night, 4 o'clock. So tune in for that also, and we will talk to you Monday. You've been in the zone.